The following program represents the views of the speaker and not necessarily those of KCBX. KCBX welcomes the comments of those with divergent views. Our phone number is 805-549-8855. Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gillard Sargent. Fred Monroe is hosting the program from home today amid continuing concerns about the spread of the COVID-19 virus. Today, Fred and his guests will discuss a very serious topic, the use of fentanyl, a powerful synthetic opioid that's on the rise. Along with that rise, we're seeing an alarming increase in deaths related to this drug. Joining Fred today are healthcare professionals working in drug and alcohol services and behavioral health. They'll have a frank discussion about the alarming nature of this drug and its increasing abuse in our communities. You're invited to listen, learn, and participate in the conversation today. Call us at 805-549-8855 or email your questions to voices@kcbx.org. Hello, Fred.
Hi, Brett. Good to be with you today. Thank you for the introduction. We're all ready to go on this end. Before we get into today's program, I want to interject one thing. We have talked a lot about COVID, in fact, too much, of course, for the last year. COVID is not our topic today, but I wanted to interject that I personally had my second Moderna vaccination on Sunday with no side effects. It's a relief to me, and personally, I would recommend everyone who is able to take COVID vaccine that they consider doing so as soon as they possibly can.
I had my first shot this past weekend, and looking forward to my second.
Good. Glad to hear that.
Thank you.
Okay. We are going to talk about a very serious and grave topic today, and that is deaths involving fentanyl, which is on the rise nationally and locally. It's a powerful synthetic opiate that's very similar to morphine and has about 50 to 100 times higher potency than those drugs. It was originally used as an anesthetic, and it's legally used as a severe painkiller, typically for advanced forms of cancer pain. The CDC has reported that the rates of overdose deaths involving this synthetic opioids has increased substantially in the last few years. Most of these deaths in the U.S. are linked to illegally made fentanyl. The reason for these deaths increases is kind of a nebulous topic. But my guest today, Katie Dolezal, who's a nurse practitioner with San Luis Obispo County Drug and Alcohol Services, and Jen Rhodes, who is with the SLO, or San Luis Obispo County Opioid Safety Coalition, and she is the Opioid Safety, she's with County Behavioral Health Prevention and Outreach, and she is the Opioid Safety Coalition Coordinator. There were too many C's in that introduction, and I apologize. Today, we're going to talk about this alarming trend and what individuals and the community can do to address that. I want to remind you again that you can send your questions by email to voices@kcbx.org. You can also call in at 805-549-8855. And I will assure you, the emails come to the KCBX email box that I monitor and is monitored for this program. If you have questions you'd like to ask and you would like to be anonymous about them, your email and your email information will not be passed along to any of my guests. If you do have a topic or a question that's more elaborate for us to answer on the program, and you would like to have it addressed by my guests, please notate that in the email and we will gladly send it along. Those people who want help and support on this topic, in some cases, need to be as public as possible by their choice, and in other cases, need to be as private and confidential as possible. And we will respect those boundaries. And I suspect my guests know on a daily basis about how difficult it is sometimes to get people in the discussion because those boundaries become very, very hard to define sometimes. Thank you for joining us today. This is a topic I know the two of you talk about all the time. It is your daily work. It is your profession. For those of us who are not looking at it on a regular basis, it's a topic that we as a community tend to stay away from too long. Can you give us some background on the origins of this drug and how it's become such a prolific drug in the secondary and illegal markets? Who'd like to jump in? I'm sorry, because I'm not quite sure how to frame the discussion any more succinctly than that.
Well, I'll just start. I've been treating
this is Katie,
individuals
by the way.
That. Okay, yeah. Oh, sorry. This is Katie Dolezal. Yeah. I'm a nurse practitioner at Drug and Alcohol Services, and I run our medication-assisted treatment team. And medication-assisted treatment is a newfangled term for what we used to call detox, our detox program. And so I've been taking care of people using opiates, generally heroin, for a long time. And about 10 to 15 years ago, we really saw fentanyl as a diverted opiate. As in, people would, you know, steal out of grandmother's closet because her cabinet because she had a fentanyl patch, or she would, you know, buy from somebody a lollipop. And so fentanyl was really, quite a while ago, only a diverted medication. And so it didn't account for much of the opiate use. And then in the 90s, it began to be discovered that fentanyl was creeping into our community. And so now you can fast forward to, 2021. And as a clinician, day-to-day taking care of people that use heroin, I pretty much expect fentanyl in all the drug panels that I review and obtain, because it's adulterating everything from heroin to methamphetamine to cocaine. So what's kind of frightening about this drug/medication is that it's everywhere and it's being disguised as other things. So I'm sure Jen can tell us how it's increased in the last few years to become such a problem.
It certainly has, and I think speaking to part of your question, Fred, about kind of how did this shift from what Katie is talking about, how it was really just kind of like a standalone medication, to really entering the illicit market. The majority of the fentanyl that that Katie's seeing with her clients, that really our nation is seeing in overdoses, and out on the streets, is manufactured illicitly. It is cheap to manufacture, and it's also, like you mentioned, it's 50 to 100 times more potent than heroin and morphine. And given that information, it's kind of that idea of a little bit goes a long way. So so the folks around the world, and even here in our country, that are into illicit manufacturing, are able to use a little bit of this cheaply made, a very highly potent drug, and are able to mix it into, like Katie's saying, the heroin that they're putting out on the streets, the meth, the cocaine. We're even seeing it, locally here in the past a few years, being pressed into counterfeit pills. So it is certainly alarming. I think there's a lot of myths around, around fentanyl too. But part of it is that there's, unless you're getting medication from a pharmacist, you have to assume that you have no idea what is really in whatever it is that that you're purchasing or obtaining on the street. So that's certainly a concern, and we're seeing, as you mentioned, overdose rates of all kinds are increasing. we've seen locally, just in SLO County, the number of overdoses that are involving fentanyl increase dramatically. In 2019, there were 9 overdoses that the victim had fentanyl in their system. In 2020, that number was 26. So we're seeing it a lot of times. It's in people that don't even know that they're getting an opiate. And so that's super scary, you know.
So. One of the things, Ed, from the numbers that you just read off and some of the notes that you sent us and shared with us before the program, I would say that it's more alarming than what you just presented, because the rate that those 9 cases in, or 9 fatalities in 19 were part of 20 in the county that made that. So 11 of the 20 were a different drug, but in 2020, of those 26 were 26 of 37 total, which means for some drugs, the rate of risky behavior and fatalities, if you will, is going down. For this drug, it's obviously going up, but we're also talking about almost double the cases in a 1-year span. I realize it's going to be difficult for us to sort out exactly what the implications are of that until we look at maybe 2021 and 2022 statistics and hopefully see things improve, because we were dealing with isolation, a lot of people who were I don't know, the level of depression that probably we're going to see that was brought about by people being isolated or homebound or working from home instead of in a environment with colleagues are going to affect a lot of things. Probably the thing that we haven't come on yet that I think is important is, what kind of cases are you looking at when you look at not only the fatalities, but cases that may come up that hopefully are not fatal, that are related to people who don't even realize that this is the drug that they were dealing with, that have come into the situation and it's a factor of them using a drug and they didn't even know what it was. And does that make it difficult for you to even understand in some cases, tracking down sources, if you will?
Well, what I find, I work in a county setting, and we have, our client base are those that are Medi-Cal beneficiaries. Additionally, I have a really small private practice, and I only mention that because I tend to see younger people in my private practice, and it's very distressing to me that I've had people come looking for Suboxone, buprenorphine, detoxification assistance that are in their early 20s and find a source of pills that they thought was Valium, or they thought was a benzo, or they thought was a Norco. And then 4 or 5 days later, they try to stop taking it and found they're strung out on fentanyl. And so it's very frightening. And I think people on some levels aren't expecting nor desiring to actively use fentanyl every day. Additionally, what makes it challenging is people that use stimulants don't expect to get physiologically dependent. And so just to step out of, 20 plus years of helping people stop using an opiate, if I was purely thinking as a business person, putting something that makes you physiologically dependent into a stimulant, which is not physiologically dependent, is a heck of a business plan. So we have people that could very well use methamphetamine or a cocaine for the weekend and expect to stop, and then Monday and Tuesday become ill, not with withdrawal, not understanding that they're physiologically dependent. So it's very, very deceptive And the other comment I would like to share is those numbers are frightening for all of us, because these are our neighbors, our friends, our children, our parents, is that we at Drug and Alcohol Services, and every single provider I know, has worked very hard to get Narcan in the community. And so these are the ones where Narcan wasn't available. I could share with you every single person that I see has either been reversed or has reversed someone else. So it's very frightening. I think people are getting sort of caught up in a fentanyl world that they hadn't expected.
Yeah, let's back up a little bit. We probably need to describe the drug you're talking about that basically is a, bad layman's term, an instant counteracting response drug to an overdose.
Sure.
That may be a really lousy layman's explanation. I'm sure you can correct me.
Oh, no, that's beautiful. We call it we call it an anecdote. I don't care what it's called. Well, technically, it's a reversal. So what it does is it's called Narcan. It's provided to the body either intranasally or intramuscularly. And it reverses an opiate overdose. And so thankfully, it's with first responders on many levels, police officers, obviously EMS. We hand it out by the boxes here at Drug and Alcohol Services. And so we are working to have Narcan, which reverses an overdose, in the hands of every single person who has an opiate user in their life or knows of them, because it saves lives. I have a client base of probably 150 clients, and every single one of them has either been reversed or reversed someone else. So you can take that exponentially to see how many lives are saved. So given that massive effort, our numbers are still going up.
So if you are a friend or family member, cohabitant, partner with someone that you are concerned has this kind of opiate problem, you can keep that drug around the house.
Oh, yes. We think of it like a fire extinguisher.
Okay. Where does someone acquire it? Now my hunch is that it's easily acquired, but I'm sure you can give us a rather complex complex answer about how people can acquire it. Because my hunch is a lot of people, if I have a family member that has a problem with any kind of opioid issue, but especially fentanyl, my fear about trying to acquire this is all of a sudden I have marked my household. And that is a fear I'm sure a lot of people have. So how do we address that? How are you addressing that kind of concern to have this good explanation, fire extinguisher readily available, and everybody should have one? I mean, I have a fire extinguisher in my kitchen for kitchen fires, and I've never used it, but doggone it, I always have one that'll work nearby.
Exactly. Well, there was some great legislation, and I don't know the year, it's very recent, called co-prescribing. So every single person that gets a prescription for an opiate is supposed to be prescribed Narcan. Okay, first off, that's kind of a first line intervention. Second is, whoever's listening can come to Drug and Alcohol Services, knock on our door, so to speak, and we will give you a Narcan. No questions asked. We give you a little bit of training and send you off with whatever, however many little nasal sprays that you're interested in. We give it to our community partners. And if you are so inclined, of course, the syringe exchange gives Narcan. And additionally, I'll just put in a big plug for your pharmacies, because you can go to any retail or most retail pharmacies, and they will give you the Narcan No prescription needed. Pharmacists have gone through training to be able to teach individuals how to use this life-saving medication. No fuss, no muss. If you want to keep your name out of a medical record completely, you just purchase it. Sadly, it's more expensive. My editorial is more expensive than it should be. So you could be looking at, you know, $100, but $100 versus your loved one's life. Insurances cover it. They don't cover it very well. They may knock off half. And then again, the state of California has been amazing by basically giving us as much free intranasal Narcan as we can distribute. So I agree. It's a little uncomfortable thinking of having it in your house, going someplace and sort of, you know, marking yourself. That being said, it can be tucked away and like the fire extinguisher, hopefully you'll never need it. And it could be that you have somebody next door who uses an opiate as prescribed. And, you know, sometimes if you add, if you take an opiate sort of as prescribed and then you add another medication or alcohol, overdoses also occur, and we don't call them generally overdoses. They're accidental over ingestion, if you will.
why did that term become required?
Well, because when people are being prescribed opiates and they end up in an overdose scenario, it doesn't feel good to think of it as an overdose. And so as an educator, we don't want to use that term. We just say, oh, you accidentally took more opiate than you were supposed to. And that's one of the beauties of co-prescribing, is that we want people to have that, anybody that's being prescribed an opiate, to have Narcan, no questions asked. There's no blame or shame to it. It just comes with it automatically.
We do have one email we received, and this is kind of piggybacked on what you've already said, but to define this, one of our listeners wrote in and basically said that Narcan was freely available at the, I'm reading exactly what you wrote, the Slow Bangers Syringe Exchange and Overdose Prevention Program.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. Is that a program Absolutely. Separate from you, or is that part of your program? Or?
Well, there are cousins and neighbors and colleagues. It is a private enterprise, a volunteer program that we appreciate greatly. And it's the syringe exchange is what I mentioned earlier.
Okay.
Absolutely. Yep, absolutely. So both that outlet and Drug and Alcohol Services, walk in, no fuss, no muss.
Okay. By the way, to our listener who sent that in, you included a phone number, and I'm not quite sure if you included your phone number by reference to the email, or this is the phone number for that program. If you want to send me another note and let me know if it's a phone number that we can give out publicly for that program, I will gladly do so. But I did not want to mistakenly give out your phone number also. So anyway, so thanks very much. Okay.
Fred, I do have the number for Slow Bangers.
Okay.
And that is? Okay, it's 548-0123, and it's every Wednesday from 5:30 to 8:15 at the Public Health on Johnson Avenue.
Okay, you have it. You showed us 548 or?
548-0123.
Okay, the listener sent it in with some numbers turned in that, so I'm not quite sure, but we'll leave it alone. I suspect you have the number that will work. You've probably called it before. Okay.
I have a great flyer.
Okay, great. Thank you. All righty, appreciate it. Thanks. And thanks for the listener sharing that information with us. So
I wanted to Fred, that part of your, you know, your question was if you have community members are, you know, fearful for you know, whatever reason, or anxious about having Narcan or naloxone in their home, that it works to kick opioids off of the receptors in the brain, it's not a medication that could be abused, and you cannot hurt somebody by using it. So let's say you have a friend or family member and you know that they use substances. Maybe you don't know what they use, but you know, you come across them and they're unresponsive, or you come across somebody and they're unresponsive and you think possibly it's an overdose, and you're like, hey, I have this, you know, Narcan here. I'm going to call 911. I'm going to see if I can help them. Well, if they aren't having an opioid overdose and you give them Narcan, it doesn't do anything to hurt them. It's not going to do anything to help them, but it will not hurt them. It's one of those, it's kind of a magical medication, and that really it can only help. And so there's not a downside to having it on hand. And I would even venture to say that, you know, it would be great, like we're talking about fentanyl here and how it is, we're seeing it over and over again mixed, you know, sometimes unknown into different types of drugs. So I would say if you have a friend, a family member, a neighbor, you know, et cetera, that, you know, is using any kind of substances, it would be a great idea to have Narcan or naloxone on hand, because you never know when they might get something or get a pill or something that does have fentanyl in it, and they would need that Narcan. And you could certainly save their life with it.
I want to back up to something that Katie was talking about before, and that you mentioned that anyone who is prescribed this drug or an opioid for any other reason is supposed to be offered this drug as the Narcan, as that fire extinguisher to have that goes along with it. I mean, if you're selling someone matches, you ought to tell them how to put them out if they need to. I have to say, because there's a conversation I had with a family member before this program, that doesn't always happen. Physicians don't always mention it. Prescribing entities don't always mention it. Is there a way as a community that we can make that a more pervasive offering to people on the front end, because tomorrow may be too late?
Well, that's, I'll just give a plug for Jen's organization. That's one of the beauties of the Opiate Overdose Coalition. And if anybody has a passion for this, I'm sure Jen will be happy to put you to work, so to speak, because we have a very large swath of community members. And so we do the best we can to come together and educate and motivate. So I don't know, Jen, do you want to give some details?
Yeah, I think that, you know, part of it would be, a lot of what we try and do as a coalition is community outreach and education, and making it known that this is a resource and available to folks. And we have done outreach with different medical groups and doctors to try and inform patients about what are some questions you should, you know, ask your doctor if you're getting an opioid prescription. And also doing some outreach with the pharmacists themselves. So I believe, and I can't think of the exact parameters of the law that that Katie was talking about, that was passed a few years ago, about prescribers needing to also prescribe naloxone. But it's in certain situations. It's like they're required to co-prescribe naloxone if they're prescribing, like, over a certain amount of opiates, or if the patient is of high risk, you know, in some capacity. So it's not, so we kind of wish it was just across the board. Every opiate prescription comes with a naloxone prescription. And the law isn't as broad as that. However, I think as far as advocacy goes, it's, you know, a great opportunity, particularly because pharmacists can, you know, can furnish naloxone without a prescription, that when somebody's picking up an opiate prescription, it would be awesome if the pharmacist would say, oh, you're receiving, you know, an opiate prescription. Would you also like to have, you know, naloxone with it? And this is what it is. So so even if the patient's doctor doesn't necessarily prescribe it, there is a secondary opportunity for the pharmacist to provide education about why it would be a really great idea to have both.
Yeah, we'll continue this discussion. My guests are going to be with me for the next half an hour of the program. We're going to just take a quick break, let Brad tell us that we're on KCBX and what's going on, and we'll be back with you very shortly. This is Central Coast Voices. Thank you for joining us today. We'll be back on the program in just a few moments.
The KCBX Quiet Pledge Drive is on now, and you could win a $500 Visa gift card. Everyone who donates to KCBX by April 2nd is automatically entered into our spring sweepstakes. Support KCBX today for more news and great music tomorrow. And who knows, $500 could be yours. Contest details are available online at kcbx.org, or you can call us at 800-549-8855. And thanks for joining us today on KCBX. This afternoon, you can hear Latino USA coming up at 2 o'clock, followed by Fresh Air at 3, and Marketplace at 4 o'clock. Central Coast Voices continues here on KCBX.
Thank you. We're back. My guests today are from Drug and Alcohol Services and Behavior Health in San Luis Obispo County. We are talking about fentanyl and drug issues and incredible fatalities that we have had from this drug and the rise of those fatalities from overdose within the last year. We got an email from a listener, and that's Danae Boggs, who's with Cuesta College. She let us know that there is a program called Sobriety Road, which is a Zoom event this afternoon. It features a local addiction expert, Jody Belcher, who has shared her documentary, Sobriety Road. It is a free event at 3:30 this afternoon. You can register for the event at posafy.org. That's for Prevention of Substance Abuse for Youth. And if you go to that and then click on the Cuesta link at the top and follow the registration information, you can participate in that event. It is 3:30 this afternoon till 5. It is free if you would like to participate. This is the kind of event that is good for us to know about, because there is not enough outreach. What the county does and what both of you are doing on a daily basis is incredibly admirable and a noble effort. And there's not enough of that, or we would have less fatalities as opposed to more. Is the price of this drug what has indeed been the key point of why it is so widely used? I mean, obviously, if you're buying illegal drugs and you don't buy them through open channels and they cost you more money than you can afford, you look for the cheapest alternative. And let's be realistic, people are continuing to use drugs. Drug overdoses, as Jen mentioned earlier, are not going down, which means in this case, fatalities are not going down. And frankly, there are organizations trying to put together recovery centers and recovery programs, some of them locally, who are getting ranting and raving from their neighbors that they don't want it in their neighborhood. They all want it someplace else. And I think that this is a tough barrier for us to kind of fight with sometimes. What do you see that the broader community can be doing that we're not doing? Because I'm sure you see things frustrating every day that are not being paid attention to enough by those people who are not directly affected in their minds by this kind of problem. I throw that out to both of you.
Well, I think, across the board, what we're talking about is stigma, right? We're talking about many of us who are not entrenched in this world, whether it's by virtue of it's our work or it's our family or if it's our friend or it's ourselves, we tend not to pay attention to it. We tend to have kind of a, well, that's a them issue, right? Or we turn addiction is often seen as, you know, a moral failing, like, well, that person, they made that choice, right? I've heard people say that about naloxone, like, you know, well, why do you, you know, they're doing this to themselves, right? Which is, if you take a step back and think about, you know, would you want that said about a family member, a friend, right? Science has been telling us for, you know, for years and years and years that substance use disorders are just that. It's a disorder. It's a medical issue and it requires treatment and a lot of support. What it doesn't require is, you know, people being shamed or people saying, you know, we have no use for that in our community. Well, of course, we don't want people sick. We don't want people dying. We don't want people's lives to be, you know, more difficult than they need to be. So as a community, we need to make space for treatment. We need to make space for, you know, sometimes harm reduction, right? The needle exchange and having naloxone, of course, in an ideal society, we wouldn't need those things. But that's not our reality. And so I think that, you know, I think that a lot of compassion could be held by all of our community members and really seeing that, that this is, you know, it's not a moral failing on behalf of the person suffering. It's a person suffering. And if it was any other type of ailment, we would be having fundraisers for them. We would, you know, have the cashiers at grocery stores saying, oh, would you like to donate a dollar today to, you know, support, you know, such and such treatment program. And we don't see that a lot. And I think that that's a role that everybody in the community can help advocate for, just being supportive and recognizing that that this is a problem in our community that we have the power to fix and to help and to offer support. So I don't know if Katie, you have more to add on that note. I kind of went on a soapbox there for a minute.
No, it's a great soapbox.
I would say I appreciate the fact you're on your soapbox because this is what you do. Obviously, this is not just a job to either of you. This is really a challenge, and I admire you for doing that and participating in this. Katie, you were going to add some comments.
No, I love that soapbox. as individuals are, you know, 20, 30 years, it's been determined that, you know, they call it the hijacked brain, that you, once you get to a point where you are addicted, not dependent, but addicted, you need some assistance. And I want to put a plug in that not everybody that has a problem with substances ends up in treatment. And so I think this is where, again, community members can take care of each other. Lots of people recover with AA, NA, church, Celebrate Recovery. And again, echoing what Jen said, compassion versus, I don't want to say blaming because I don't think anybody sets out to blame someone. It's an uncomfortable conversation. And I'll just use the analogy, if you have somebody in your life that you know is drinking and driving, it is uncomfortable to say, can I have your keys? And so same thing with somebody you believe is using substances, ask, can I take your keys? Can I have a dialogue about this? It is uncomfortable. We are, our community, our nation has been, you know, built on pull yourself by your bootstraps, you know, get over yourself, get on with it. Whereas that kind of philosophy is not helpful in recovery from addiction. And I do want to segue, if you don't mind, that one of the things that's frightening about the last year, COVID, is people recover with each other. And I'm hoping and praying that once we are allowed to spend more physical time together, that our numbers will go down. I've heard the term deaths of despair, because people in recovery, we need each other. We as humans need each other. We need each other. And when you're in recovery, many, many people recover with the help of others. And I can't think of the number of people that have relapsed the minute our whole world shut down. So they were not able to attend their local meeting, their church, you know, spend time with the people that supported them through this. So I'm just hopeful that as things begin to open up, we will again be able to support each other in recovery.
Very, very good point. Thank you. Want to interject a couple of things. Christina, our producer, sent me a note letting me know that that Jen and Katie had sent her a list of places where Narcon is available beyond what we just talked about here. And she will post it to when you go into KCBX and pull up our program, when the program's archive is available, it gives a list of, there's some room for narrative, and she's going to add that to the narrative. So if at the end of the program, any of our listeners are looking for information about how Narcan is available and what other programs are available, that will be posted on the KCBX website on the link for Central Coast Voices. And I also want to interject Lou sent back another note that she's the person from Bangers that basically said, statistically at this point, the Bangers and its program are reducing on average about 20 overdoses a month. That's a startling number. It's good to hear that's happening. It's a startling number that's the number that's out there that's even successfully being addressed on a regular basis. So we obviously, in this regard, have a community that sounds like it's pulling together in a lot of different avenues. So I commend those people who are involved in that. One of the things that Katie, I think you, and Jen, if this was you, I apologize. Sometimes the program gets, in my mind, just gets run together, even though I can see you both, mentioned that there's this misconception that the only people who have overdoses are people who are already addicts. To some extent, the inverse, I would believe, is true, because people who are can't think of a better choice of words, and it's probably not the best word, who are casual drug users are probably less informed and less studious drug users, if you will, may be at higher risk in a lot of cases for overdoses. And we're talking about a drug that is 50 or 100 times more potent than the average street drug that's not related to it. Is this a misconception that gets in the way a lot of your efforts?
Do you want to? My world is so entrenched in like hardcore addiction that I'm not sure I have a very good view of that, because yes, all my clients are daily users and they do overdose. Though, if you want to use that analogy, they're very experienced at using. And I'll just say that I have many clients that are very, very, very careful, that there's not a desire to die. They want to, so sorry if I'm sounding like a harm rejection, they want to use safely and not die. So we think of it as, let's keep people alive until they're ready to get into treatment, which is what we hope for them. So I would say that you don't necessarily need to be a daily or quote unquote hardcore user to be at risk at overdose. But I think I'll let Jen talk about from more community level.
Yeah, I think part of where that, you know, comes from is that the idea of preparedness, right? So so let's imagine that I'm, you know, fully entrenched in, you know, in my drug use, my drug of choice, right? I'm probably already going to be connected either within like my friend group or whatever with supportive services like Slow Bangers or like, you know, recovery group or like with drug and alcohol services, where I'm going to have access to Narcan. I'm going to have access to fentanyl test strips, right? So that I'm going to have access to some of that knowledge that Katie was talking about was, if I'm going to use, I'm probably going to do what I can to learn how to do it safely and not die. Whereas, like Katie mentioned, she sees a lot of younger people, folks in their 20s, that are kind of surprised finding themselves using opiates, whether it's, you know, counterfeit pills laced with fentanyl, you know, or some other substance, who, you know, they wouldn't consider themselves to be a, you know, a quote unquote drug user, right? They bought these pills to go party and all of a sudden they're overdosing. Well, nobody, you know, their friends don't know what to do, right? They're not necessarily in a place where they have prepared for this because they didn't think that they would ever be there. And so I think that, you know, kind of our original topic of what does fentanyl look like in our community, that's one of the scary things, is that people not expecting to ingest it are, and they're not prepared for treating that type of emergency. So
it sounds like one of the things that you may be dealing with also is that because this drug masquerades as other opioids, and a lot of casual users, for lack of a better word to use, may figure, okay, well, this is a drug that's been manufactured by Big Pharma, and it's not going to be dangerous, and I can try it one time. And I suspect that there's this false lure of safety that, and you're dealing with very risky drugs. Even the prescription version of the drugs are very risky. And then you have a drug like this that is substantially higher in potency for people who may be casual users. My hunch is it's a kind of question you have to address post-overdose, and in some cases dealing with family members with a fatality. The question is, gee, I didn't think that this could kill you. And I suspect it's something that you deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, and that's part of why, as a coalition, we're really kind of down the road of wanting to educate the entire community about Narcan and naloxone, reducing the stigma around it, because you really, you know, it's foreseeable that you don't know when you might need it or need to know about it. And so encouraging people to kind of see the widespread you know, opportunity for needing it. So
I want to correct a misconception that I had, because Christina just sent me back another note. She does not have a list that the two of you provided for her. She basically mentioned to me to ask you that if there's a way that even a short list of what's available for those kind of connections, you can send over to Christina. She will then post it on the website. Sorry, Christina, and sorry to our listeners for my reading and while trying to do a radio program, reading an email too fast from that standpoint. But that's the corrected information. Yeah. I do apologize for committing you to something that you have not even done yet. And so I appreciate that. I want to get for clarification, Narcan and naloxone are the same drug, but under different names, or there's a difference in the two drugs?
No, naloxone is just the overall, the medication.
Okay.
Narcan is the specific brand of the nasal spray that is widely used, and it's what our law enforcement carries. It's what Drug and Alcohol Services gives out. It's what Slow Bangers gives out in addition to the intramuscular naloxone.
Okay. Yeah, because I didn't want to confuse anyone, and my reference to both of them somewhat interchangeable without being more specific may have been a concern for some people.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Kleenex tissue thing. So a lot of times, you know, people say Narcan, meaning just naloxone in general. So I try to just be kind of careful with that too. Or sometimes I'll say both so that, you know, in case people know one versus the other.
Yeah. I want to reemphasize, and I think this is very important, and you've talked about it, but I think it's important to say again, and that is that it's possible to acquire Narcan without anything other than a personal request through either a physician or a pharmacy to get it. That there are areas within the county that we will list on the website where it may be available to you. It doesn't come with a please prove you need it or please rat out the person who has a need for it before we'll give it to you. And I think it's wonderful. Is that level of availability something that came about by the state law in California, or is it become a national trend also to make that readily available?
Oh, it's absolutely a national trend. San Luis Obispo County, we, like the whole nation, realize, wow, there's a lot more people dying of opiates than there had been. And so, anyways, I want to say 2013, 2014, you know, we got together and with the assistance of different projects brought Narcan here. And so we were about, in San Luis County, we were about, I don't know, 10 years behind, say, San Francisco. So yeah, I would absolutely say this is a local, state, and national effort. When the numbers started skyrocketing with our opiate overdose crisis, so yes, this is absolutely I would probably say worldwide push. But I can speak for San Luis Obispo County, that's for sure.
Thank you. As our regular listeners know, I do my best to get out of the way for a few minutes at the end of the program because even though our guests are the experts on this, I tend to talk too much. So I want to make sure that we have an opportunity to before we leave, make sure people understand what both of your agencies can consider doing and people can work with you. Jen, why don't I start with you? Your parting thoughts.
So thank you, friend. Thank you so much for having us on to talk about this. It's always fun to have a media group reach out and ask to talk with us versus us saying, hey, you want to talk to us, right? So I really appreciate the opportunity to be here and speak with your listeners and you, of course. So I think my parting thoughts are that, you know, thinking about substance use and naloxone, and that even if you think it's not going to affect you, or you might not have, you know, an opportunity to ever use naloxone, maybe it's something to think about. You know, think about having it on hand. It's like I said before, it is it's a really low risk thing to have that could potentially provide a very, very important service. And you, quite frankly, you know, like you said, in your kitchen, you don't want to wait for a kitchen fire to figure out, oh, maybe I should have a fire extinguisher near me. Because at that point it's, you know, it's going to be too late. So those would be my parting thoughts is just, you know, for all the listeners who, you know, hopefully are now a little bit more informed, to think about taking that next step. And have that conversation with a friend, a neighbor, about this topic. Because I think the more that we talk about it, the more normal it becomes. And we kind of bring back that whole idea of caring about our neighbors, you know, more than just waving hello and not knowing what they're up to. So,
thank you, Jen. Katie.
I guess, gosh, I'll just say, I repeat what Jen says. Thank you for bringing us. She did it so eloquently. I don't need to repeat it. So thank you. I guess from a treatment perspective, ask the question, have the conversation. If you see somebody, again, the analogy is drinking and they shouldn't be driving, you know, ask to take their keys, even if it's uncomfortable. If you see somebody in your life that you believe is struggling with their addiction on any level, whether it's fentanyl, alcohol, stimulants, pills, whatever it is, have the conversation. Addiction flourishes in the dark and in secret. And so when we begin to have the dialogue with the people that we care about, that's the first step, potentially helping them into treatment. Now, I don't believe anybody goes into treatment until they're quote unquote ready. I hate to use that term, but that being said, there is treatment. People can heal from fentanyl addiction, from heroin addiction, from alcohol addiction. I happen to work in a setting where our insurance base is Medi-Cal, though there are many wonderful providers in our community. If you have mainstream insurance, or fee-for-service. We have very caring people in our community that can and will help with addiction, fentanyl, or any other substance. So I would just encourage you, if you see it, be brave and have the conversation, because that individual may be waiting to tell their deep, dark secret.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you to both of my guests. We had one parting comment from a listener, and I'll interject it real quickly. And that is, if you are a parent of teenagers, you have conversations with your children about sex education and reality of those kind of challenges, please have conversations with them about drugs and risks involved, and make sure that we help keep our children alive. And thank you to that listener who shared that Absolutely. Information with us. Thank you. Yep. This is Central Coast Voices. I want to thank you all for joining us today. I'll let you know that Chris Kington Barker will be back with us next week. I'll see you in 2 weeks. She is going to have a program from dealing with the National Equal Pay Day, reflecting the fact that women in our workforce are still only paid 82 cents on the dollar of value compared to men. She will have guests from the American Association of University Women and other guests to talk about that kind of pay gap. This has been Central Coast Voices. I want to thank you to Joan Gellert Sargent for her ongoing support of the program. You can still send your comments after the program and anytime you have a recommendation to voices@kcbx.org. Thank you to Brad for being our in-studio engineer today. He's in the studio live, so we can do this by remote, and I appreciate that. Thank you to Katie Dolezal and Jen Rhodes for being our guests today. This is a very important topic. Truly, God bless you for the work you do, because it is very, very admirable, the challenges you take on every day with this. And I hope we have helped some people today. Thank you all. This has been Central Coast Voices.
Thanks for tuning in to Central Coast Voices. This show will be available to listen to later today on our website, kcbx.org. And a reminder that you can hear any of our local shows anytime and stream on demand from kcbx.org. Find us on social media at kcbxfm.